Now that we have explored numerous interventions to use with the anxiety disordered child or adult, before we go to some visualization interventions, let's look at exactly how the anxiety process works in your client's mind. I like to think of the anxiety disorder as a hypersensitive alarm system. Maybe you do the same. The anxious client is so sensitive to any stimuli that might be taken as indicating a disaster or harm that he or she is constantly warning himself about potential danger, because almost any stimuli can be perceived by him or her as dangerous and can trip off the alarm, so to speak. As you know, the anxious client experiences many false alarms, which keep him or her in a constant state of emotional stress and turmoil. This preoccupation with danger materializes by the continuous involuntary occurrence of automatic thoughts in verbal or visual forms. Now, their content involves possible physical or mental harm. These thoughts tend to occur repetitively and rapidly and seem completely plausible to the client, I'm sure you'll agree, at the time of their occurrence. Now, many times a thought is so fleeting that your client is aware only of the anxiety that it generates. This is another key point I find very important to stress with the client and often provides a great initial insight, the fact that they have a fleeting thought that they are unaware of that is actually generating their anxiety. An intervention I use, I call this instant replay, and this works very well with children because they obviously can relate to videos. Clients can be trained to perform an instant replay and recover the automatic thought preceding their anxious reaction. This thought is derived from the information processing system that activates the affect or the reaction, and that's what I'd like to talk about next, is this information processing system. In addition to having repetitive thoughts about danger which set off false alarms, ability to reason with these thoughts, as you know, is impaired. While the client may agree that these fearful thoughts are illogical, his or her ability to evaluate them objectively without help is limited, I find. Your client behaves as though he or she believes in the validity of their misconceptions. The client may suspect that they are totally unrealistic, but is usually unable to do anything about them. Objectivity is similarly lost when a client attempts to test the reality of the visual images that may accompany or substitute for verbal cognitions. For example, Charles had constant visualizations about getting stomach cancer, a disease from which his father had died in childhood. Another characteristic of anxious thinking is its involuntary nature. Automatic thoughts exert a continuous pressure, even though a person has already determined that they are invalid and would like to be rid of them. The involuntary characteristic of anxious thinking and other mechanisms blocking or the choking of feelings may lead to anxious losing their minds, and I'm sure we've had several clients in our offices that have been so anxious this is their presenting problem. Earlier in the tape, you received a specific technique to assist your client to control these automatic thoughts. Now, let's look at anxiety as it relates to stimulus generalization, catastrophizing, and dichotomous thinking. Use these as a three-point checklist and think of a client you have that you may need to re-examine or revisit these three principles with. Let's look at stimulus generalization first, and hopefully you have an anxiety disordered client in mind. The range of stimuli that can evoke anxiety is in generalized anxiety disorders may increase until almost any stimuli is perceived as a danger. For example, one of my clients in an acute state of anxiety had the following experiences. The sound of the siren of a fire engine evoked the thought, my house may be on fire. An airplane flying overhead triggered a visual image of herself in an airplane crashing into another plane. After seeing the scene of an accident on television, she visualized herself bleeding and suffering. How does your anxiety disordered client use generalizations? Next, let's look at catastrophizing and how your client uses that. As mentioned earlier, clients tend to dwell on the worst possible outcome of a situation in which there is a possibility of an unpleasant outcome. Your anxious client overemphasizes the probability of this catastrophic outcome and usually exaggerates the possible consequences of its occurrence. Examples of catastrophizing are: Jason, a successful college student, when taking an exam, was preoccupied with the possibility of his failing. He imagined that if he failed the test, he would flunk out of college and as a consequence would end up as a homeless person. Ask yourself, from the previously mentioned strategies, which one might you use to help your catastrophizing client view situations more realistically? Thirdly, think about your anxiety disordered client related to dichotomous thinking. Another characteristic in the thinking of an anxiety disordered client, in addition to generalizing and catastrophizing, is, as I've just mentioned, the tendency, when there is any question of a danger, to interpret events in dichotomous terms. Thus, unless a situation is unmistakably safe, the client is likely to appraise it as unsafe. He or she has no tolerance for uncertainty or ambiguity, and that's where the dichotomous thinking comes in. The rustling of blinds indicates an intruder. The backfire of an automobile sound may sound like the firing of a gun. Shortness of breath means that they are going to stop breathing entirely. Ready for question 12? What are examples of characteristic thinking of an anxiety disordered client?